This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in to another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager here at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at DMel57, and I still haven't been banned by the Twitter overlords yet, so that's pretty great. Got my usual crew with me as we're going to look ahead a little bit to the Blackhawks trade deadline and everything that's going to happen in the next few weeks now that we know who the GM is and have an idea or are about to find out pretty quickly where this franchise is heading. So I'm going to bring in all my usual line mates who have assembled with me this evening. Up first, the analytics darling of Second City Hockey. You can find on Twitter at Shepherd Price. It is Shepherd Price.
Hi. It technically be intergender wrestling, but I will wrestle Seth Rollins if literally nobody else will at WrestleMania. I don't know what's happening. He is one of the most talented wrestlers in the world, and he has nothing going on for the biggest show. Like, why even have two nights? What are we doing?
I forget Seth Rollins is a thing because of it's in that other league that I haven't even watched. I figured you were going to lead off with something related to Revolution on Sunday night, and I'm almost disappointed that you started talking about WWE. Who cares?
Okay, they did my boy Keith bad, and then Hangman got a good defense. That's like, oh, good. But like, yeah, Seth's like arguably the most famous Bears fan in wrestling. What are we doing?
Well, that just means he's sad.
Yeah. He tweets, I hate football every week in November.
Oh, and I think there's another person somewhat related to that world who probably hates hockey a lot right now. And speaking of that, let's bring in another one of the line mates this evening, because he is the Second City Hockey what Davey Havoc is to AFI. He's on Twitter at Mill182. It's Mill Savage.
And I do have some baggy white gym shorts on right now. So beautiful, beautiful callback the other night. So just so everyone knows, no worries. There will not be baseball, but there will be WWE this summer. So we're all okay. It's fine. And baseball is canceled. So I'm looking forward to baseball too.
But don't watch WWE. Watch AEW if you know it's good for you.
I mean, I watch everything, so
I don't want to talk about baseball too much because first of all, they're not playing, so there's nothing to talk about. But also, like,
I'm sad.
Shay's right there with me. Like, we've been waiting. This is part of the reason with rebuilds and is adding into my anti-rebuild stance is that I waited 5 years for the White Sox and to be what they are right now. And now I'm not getting to fucking see them because billionaires are being just the worst type of people. So I'm just
the Sox are going to get 94 again, aren't they?
I think so. Well, all right. Maybe it's too early in the game to be this pessimistic, but it seems like every night I go to bed and the last thing I see is, oh, they're getting really close. Maybe when you wake up, they'll have an agreement. And then I wake up and they're really far apart. So I don't know.
I was just looking really forward to going to Sox games as an indifferent viewer and going to their new sports book and betting first five innings and then just having a beer at the bar that has everything.
I was just looking forward to Polish sausage with onions and mustard, but I can't have that, can I?
We can't have anything nice here.
Can't have anything nice. Also with us this evening, she is the Second City Hockey Bulletin Wall of Text. You cannot find her on Twitter, but you can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. It's Betsy.
I can't contribute anything to baseball conversations. I just find it boring.
Well, I can't help you there. And also they're I think part of what they're arguing about is trying to find ways to change the game to make it less boring. But instead they're just settling for no games at all. So I don't know.
How does the like contract situation work in baseball if there's a lockout?
I imagine they don't get paid, right?
No, yeah, but like does it count as a year or?
Oh yeah. Well, like and like I guess with them and having the service time thing, which was really big with Chris Bryant, and then they never even used the service time year that they saved. And it's like the NHL equivalent of an entry level contract. Like I have no idea how that all works, to be honest.
Yeah, it's like the nine games kind of.
Yeah, like every sport I feel like now, of the four major American professional sports, all of their salary structures are so unique that you have to be so deeply into them to fully grasp all of them. Like I feel I've gotten a pretty decent on the hockey stuff because I write about it, but for NFL, NBA, and MLB, no fucking idea at all.
Also, that was the biggest joke ever, because if you've ever seen Chris Bryant, especially back then, there's no way he should have been in AAA. Yeah. He is a very large adult who can hit balls.
I'm glad the Cubs owner saved all that money so they could send him to wherever the fuck he ended up.
Well, he's not even signed right now, I don't think.
No, I don't. No,
went to San Francisco, and then that was like, you know, whatever.
All right. Well, we're dangerously close to turning this into a baseball podcast. So let's bring this back to the sport, which is the reason we've all assembled with the now offensive dynamo that is the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, 8 goals on Tuesday night against the Anaheim Ducks. Apparently, if the Hawks played the Ducks 82 times a season, they would just be they'd be 82-0. They'd be the best team in NHL history.
It'd be the 1980s.
It'd be the 1980s all over again. And I think they have another game against the Ducks coming up in a few weeks. That one's in Anaheim. So we'll see if that offense travels there. But Tuesday night's game was quite the entertaining game. Like, and they had the 8 goal outburst against, I think, the Devils a little bit ago. So, you know, we know where we are. We know the Hawks aren't going anywhere, but at least they've provided us with some level of entertainment in the last few weeks. But as I mentioned at the top, we want to look ahead a little bit to the NHL trade deadline. We're recording this on Wednesday night, March 9th. The trade deadline is Monday, March 20th, or excuse me, Monday, March 21st, if I can do math correctly, or read a calendar. Either of those things would help in this situation. But now that, again, as Kyle Davidson's been named the GM, so we know who's in charge now, finally, and we assume any reins that might have been in place while he was the interim GM have been fully removed. So we just were going to take a flight down the Blackhawks roster, mainly look at the guys with expiring contracts, and see where the conversation goes, because I imagine that's going to be the primary focus of the Blackhawks next week, is figuring out which guys with expiring contracts are on their way out of town and which ones are going to stay and maybe be back next season. So I'm going to start this one with Mill, because we usually save him for last. So we're going to let him go first this week. And the player we're going to start with is a player that has been a hot topic of conversation in the city of Chicago. And that is Dylan Strome, given how on fire he has been for the last couple of weeks. So Mill, what are your thoughts on Dylan Strome's future with regards to the upcoming trade deadline?
Well, I just want to start by saying that last night, Nick Schmaltz also had 4 points, 2 goals and 2 assists on his end in a 9-goal Coyotes effort. So with that out of the way.
So does that mean the Blackhawks are losing the trade again?
It's kind of like looking through the mirror, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very Twin Peaks. Here's the thing. I'm a Dylan Strome fan as him as a player. And I think that he's been grossly underutilized and just used incorrectly for the past couple of years. And I think that he shows a lot of flashes of what he can provide for your team, you know, in the correct situation and all that. So I would like them, I think, going forward where he's young enough, if they don't get a really good offer for him, I would just keep him because he's probably not going to command that huge amount of money going forward.
His next contract would be by the rules of restricted free agents, like the offer they would have to tender him would be $3.6 million.
Yeah, and I mean, like,
it ain't terrible.
I mean, if you look at where the league's going, and so I'm just saying, I think, like, I wouldn't trade him for, like, you know, oh, we're going to trade him for a third round pick. You know what I mean? Because that seems to be the case a lot of times at these deadlines. And, you know, I know a team like Edmonton might be really interested in him or somebody like that. But I think he's a good player. But I think this is where we're going to find out what Davidson's made of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What he thinks. So,
and we're going to keep going in the reverse order that I usually do. So we'll save Shea for the three hole. But Betsy, what are your thoughts on Dylan Strome and the trade deadline?
Well, I've always been an unapologetic Dylan Strome fan, okay. To the point that there are people who are like, are you related to him? And it's like, no, I like players that are good. And even if they're not producing sometimes, as long as like certain, there are categories that like, as long as they're doing well in those, I'm like, yes, I want that. I love playmakers. Dylan Strome is one of the best playmakers, I think, in the league. Like, I think he's near like probably the top 15, maybe. Like, his hands are better than a lot of people. His feet, not so much, but you know, that's okay. And on top of that, he works ridiculously well with two players that currently we don't have any idea if they're how long they're really going to be around. But right now they seem to be in the future plans, which is Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat. So there's just no rush to move him. He's like Mill said, he's not going to pull in anything. 2 months of good play isn't going to lift his return up to something that's actually valuable. And I'm sure GMs are also going, well, maybe he can only do that if he's with Kane and DeBrincat, which might be true, but that's Chris Kunitz, and he made a ridiculously good career out of that, won a bunch of cups. So I don't know. I think they should sit on it. I have this opinion of for that for both Strome and like Hagel. I don't think they should move them right now. I think part of Bowman's issues was timing with trades. I thought he did a poor job of timing when they should and shouldn't move guys.
I should probably, I wish I could credit this because I know I didn't come up with this originally, but I've heard or read somewhere the argument that Dylan Strome's value is higher in Chicago than it is anywhere else because of the chemistry with Alex DeBrincat and Patrick Kane. And that there may not be any other players in the NHL who he would have a better chemistry with. So his best fit is in Chicago. And because of that, like I think both of you said like something along the lines of if they get a deal that's, you know, crazy good, take it. But I feel like that's not going to materialize. So let's throw it over to Shea, who I know among the group assembled here is the most pro tear everything down proponent for the situation the Blackhawks are in right now. So Shea, your thoughts on Dylan Strome?
Dylan Strome is good. Dylan Strome is young. Dylan Strome will be cheap in his next contract. There is no reason not to keep Dylan Strome. Wow. Like the Blackhawks, even if they do tear it down, which I think again, they like there's a lot of pieces that could be moved out for the benefit of the team. They will need players to play on this team. I think it's dumb. Yeah. I think it's dumb to trade a few players, and those players are named Dylan Strome and Alex DeBrincat. And the rest can be debated.
Shay's okay. Right though. They do, I should say. The Blackhawks need players to play on the team because they are playing games, unlike baseball.
I'm still too upset about that to talk about it. But yes, to Shay's point though, like I get the I thought there would be more disagreement. Like, I think the way that Strome has played over the last month, it seems like he has changed everyone's mind. And I think the point I would make, if there's anybody who's still in the trade Dylan Strome camp saying that this is just a flash in the pan and this is not indicative of the player he's been for his career, I could agree to the level that he has been inconsistent. Yes. However, in his first season, I believe it was when he got traded to the Hawks, I think it was 51 points in 58 games. So this isn't the first time he's been really, really producing at a high level. So I
think he had something like 89 in his first 120.
Yeah.
So 115, something like that.
And with Strome, there's the asterisk that you can apply to many players of the Blackhawks present and past, I guess, is how good was the coaching when he was here? And Strome was, of all the players under Colleton's tenure that it felt like were getting mistreated and misutilized, Dylan Strome might be at the top of that list, especially with how often he was healthy scratched. And he was also hurt for a while. I know he did the COVID protocol stint that everyone else did. So, but to everyone else's points that they made very well, that he's 24, 25. Just turned 25. He's young. He's not going to break your bank for a 1-year qualifying offer. So I don't see why not. So I'm surprised we reached a consensus that quickly. I thought it was going to be more, I thought there might be a few naysayers out of the group, but it seems like everyone's pretty much on the Dylan Strome bandwagon these days. So let's go to another player, a player who's trending in the 100% opposite direction, and that's Dominik Kubalík. And I'm still kind of bummed at how poor his third season in the NHL has gone. And so we're going to swing this one over to Shay and get your Dominik Kubalík thoughts.
Yeah, as one of the two certified members of Team Kubalík, it's been a rough one. I think part of the reason is, like, again, when he was at his best in that first year, he played with Jonathan Toews, and Jonathan Toews really isn't the same guy he was, which I think was to be expected after he missed a year. He sort of just hasn't had the same chemistry with anybody else. He also seems he weirdly seems to be shooting less, and he seems to be a volume shooter when he's at his best. And like, I think he just needs to get out of town and get a change of pace and be used by somebody properly.
I can hear the dejection in every night. I can hear the dejection in your voice at the sadness of the realization that it's just not working out and he's probably gone and there's not really anything that can be done about it because it's pro sports and sometimes things happen like this. I don't know what else.
I've sort of moved on to the free Philip Kurashev movement. Stop playing him 6 minutes a night. Derek King, you weird man.
Hey, at least they didn't get any too many men penalties in the last two games, though. So there's that.
God, Betsy served them twice. It was so weird.
Yeah, Betsy, what about your Dominik Kubalík thoughts?
As the other member of team,
I thought you were the other member of this group. I just wasn't sure. So
yeah, because you guys were the Gaudette gang, which I guess we at least weren't.
Hey, which collapsed almost immediately.
We've been at the bar for a while. Now you guys can come join us. Well, please, you can come join us after they trade him.
Please pay your respects for our deceased family member.
Yes.
I mean, it's just run its course. I don't think Kubalík, in addition to shooting as much, I don't think he's been shooting as well. He keeps shooting directly into goalies. Like one of the things that was debated his first year here was, does he have a better shot than anybody else on the team? Is it actually better than DeBrincat or Kane's? And I was like, I don't know about that the entire time, but he was up there. His shot was really good. And this season is like, when he does shoot directly into the crest, or he has like so much space and he's like, I'm going to go for the pad. And you're like, why? I don't think he's been forechecking as well. I don't know if he's just in a like overall slump and it's getting to him or what, but yeah, a change of scenery could be good for him. I don't think the Blackhawks are going to get much for him, unfortunately, because
that's the worst part.
Yeah. I mean, maybe a GM will be like, yeah, maybe we can get him back to that, like what he was before, because only so many players score as many goals as Kubalik did his first season here, you know?
Yeah. That's 30 goals is not a, that's not a, a low bridge. Like, it takes a lot to get there. But like, to your point, I'm looking at his stats right now. He was a 19.1 shot percentage that season. Last season he was 10-9. This season he's 8-9. So it's still not the greatest sample overall, but I mean, one season up near 20 and two down around 10, you're starting to see which one may have been a bit of an outlier. You know, I think 10's a little low for him too. Like, he should probably be maybe in the 11-12 range and get a few more goals. But
well, part of the problem is that the Blackhawks don't have playmakers yeah. that have chemistry with him. Kubalik scored most of his goals, like an absurd number, like 84-85% of them, when like his primary line was Kubalik, Taves, and Kajula.
Brandon Saad.
That was in the
playoffs. Jared the boy.
That was in the playoffs. In the regular season, they didn't actually play very much together. But Kane, and plus, I'm really talking about the first season, Kane would flip up to the line for a short shift or two, and that would score. Like, it would just click suddenly. But having Jonathan Taves, who's a good playmaker, Patrick Kane, who's an elite playmaker, be able to feed him constantly on a line, and that's really all he had to do. The Blackhawks don't have that depth anymore, and he just didn't click with he's not clicking with Doc, who is a playmaker, and Strome and him haven't been together enough, because that Kubalik Strome Kurashev line was pretty decent last year. It hasn't worked out for Kubalik, unfortunately.
Mill, any other thoughts to add to the Dominic Kubalik discussion?
I mean, I agree with pretty much everything that was said. I'll just throw out, like, again, usage and line mates and all that kind of stuff plays into it, like was previously stated. But I kind of just feel bad for the guy, because he seems to have a little bit of something. And mm-hmm. we all saw that. And it's just kind of like, I tweeted this during the game. I said, the Hawks have one good line, but it's a pretty damn good line. And that kind of goes back to what Betsy said about playmakers. It's like, they have pieces, but they can't really connect them without Kane.
There you go. There's two other players I want to – I think the general consensus here is they're probably going to get moved at the deadline, so we probably don't need to debate them too much. And that's Ryan Carpenter and Calvin DeHaan. I think they're both pretty firmly in the expiring contract, and some team will grab them as a veteran addition, and the Hawks, you know, get whatever you can for them. And any objections?
Not really. DeHaan's good. DeHaan's been good this season. Like, yeah. the teams that are on the Ben Chiarot train should probably get instead. Like, DeHaan's going to be cheaper and probably is better than Ben Chiarot. So.
He is better than Ben Chiarot, especially this season.
Yeah. I'd rather get, if I'm a team on a playoff bubble, I'd rather have DeHaan on my third pairing than Ben Chiarot.
I like Calvin DeHaan. Seems like a cool dude. He's a great, he follows us on Twitter, so we've always liked him for that reason, or not at all. I don't know. But it seems like he and Carpenter are probably on their way out, and best of luck to them going forward. One player that the Blackhawks acquired during this season, who is on an expiring deal and is only making $750K and probably wouldn't get too much of a raise, that's Sam Lafferty, and I am intrigued by – we're going to lead with Betsy on this one. I want your Sam Lafferty thoughts, because I've been more and more intrigued by him of late.
I say keep him. I mean, I don't – he's what, 26?
27? Cap Friendly says 27.
Yeah, 27. Okay. Yeah. He must have
– he'll turn 27 and
– Yeah, he just
turned – Oh, he just did, March 6th. Yeah.
I was like
– Happy birthday, Sam. We know you're listening.
I like him. I don't think – I think he's a good lower line forward, and he's defensively strong. Like, he's really good. That was not a great sentence, but
it's okay. We'll edit it later.
English.
How do you do it? I like him a lot. I think he drives play pretty well. If you need to put together a checking line, I think he could be a really good starting point for that, especially if you're losing Carpenter, who's mm-hmm. like always been able to, and Lafferty plays both wing and center. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing to have in a checking line player, especially since we've got a couple of kids that might be able to do it at Whistle and a couple of others in the AHL, but you don't want them to all be like children on the line. you want some adult.
You need an adult in the room, I guess.
And I think he could, I think it's a good fit here at least. And yeah, I don't think he'll be expensive. Will he want to stay? Cause isn't he a UFA?
He says RFA because I don't believe he's played enough games to earn UFA status yet.
But he's 27.
I forget. It's in giant red letters that I looked at the wrong thing. He's an unrestricted free agent. I apologize. Yeah.
So yeah. I guess it depends on what he wants because he would definitely be useful to like a contender.
Yeah. He seems like the kind of player that if you let him – go like in a trade deadline thing, like I don't really know how much of a return he's gonna get because he's, you know, but who knows. I think I'm leaning into the camp that you are in. Shay, what about you?
He does seem like a carpenter type. If like you're gonna get him on like a 3-year $1 million contract, sure.
Yeah, well, maybe not three years, maybe like one or two. Make sure it's not a flash in the pan.
Like an ELC type deal, I don't mind. Yeah. You can bury that contract if you need to.
There you go.
Like, I don't mind giving term if it's.
They should always give at least two to those types of players because then they can flip them.
Yeah.
And a lot of teams are liking term, but like short term. You know, to be when they're flipped. That way they don't have to worry about it. It's not a rental.
Mill, what about you? Are you on the Sam Lafferty bandwagon?
Yeah, I think everything you guys said is true. I agree with the Carpenter comparison and just cheap deal, good fourth line guy, could play like a penalty kill and
good,
whatever
good
you need.
Fourth line guy, good in the room, you know.
but I think so. My only thing is, I don't know with a guy like that, he might say, the Blackhawks, as much of a dumpster fire that the organization seems to be, the players seem to all like the organization. They get taken care of well. So he might have had a good experience and said, hey, I want to come back and whatever. But he also might say, well, fuck it. Whoever's going to give me the most money, I'm going to go there. You know, so if somebody else is more willing to give him, you know, 1.25, he might say, well, I'm going to go to, you know, Buffalo or wherever our
it's going to be like such a difference between coming from Pittsburgh and Chicago, two of the ones that players tend to rate really highly, and then go to Buffalo, which is
I agree.
I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Well, that happened to our that happened to our one guy, Hinostroza, right?
Yeah.
It's like, why wouldn't you just pay that guy? He was pretty good when he came back.
Yeah.
Not pay him, but just sign him. Like he got a million from Buffalo.
But they wanted to get Borgstrom and take on the giant cap hit of oh my god, I'm blanking on the dude we got from him, Connolly.
Oh yeah.
Hey, don't shit on my guy, Brett Connolly. who's the same age as me, but looks twice my age.
I was gonna say 45-year-old, 30-year-old Brett Connolly.
Yeah, Brett Connolly seems like a guy who would have been on the team in Slapshot.
that's a painfully apt comparison. All right, tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick pause right here. There's a few more players we need to get to, including one pretty big name that didn't come up for reasons you'll see are kind of obvious. But we'll take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side of this timeout, and we'll find out all about that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. As promised before the break, we got a few more trade deadline candidates to dive into, including the one name that's been pretty obvious since the start of the season. But before that, let's Erik Gustafsson is on an expiring contract. Yeah, he hasn't played in a while. I'm actually going to look this up because I know he's been a healthy scratch for several games, which isn't going to do much for his trade value. He hasn't played since, I almost said March 25th. That's in the future. He hasn't played since February 25th against the New Jersey Devils. I don't know what the hell the Hawks can even get for him. I don't even know who's up in the order. Let's start with Shea on this round. Erik Gustafsson, what you got for me?
A sixth round pick could turn into Mark Stone, because you know what turned into Mark Stone? A sixth round pick. I would take a sixth round pick for Erik Gustafsson in a heartbeat.
I would take any draft pick for Erik. I would rather have a draft pick than any prospect, because the prospect is going to be so low on the totem pole that it probably wouldn't be worthwhile. But maybe, as you were alleging or referencing with the Mark Stone situation, that maybe that's maybe the Hawks get a fifth or sixth rounder and it turned into something else. I mean, they traded Alex Karpatsev years ago and got a fourth round pick that became Nicklas Hjalmarsson. So
mercifully, yeah. To Pat Foley's delight.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, let's not speak ill of Alex Karpatsev because he's no longer with us. So we don't want to do that. But Betsy, Erik Gustafsson, what you got?
Goodbye. You go. I mean, to be fair, I think Erik Gustafsson has played better than, say, Caleb Jones. Most of the time, which is
low bar to clear. He just needs to change his last name. If he was Erik Jones, he'd be in the lineup every night.
Caleb Jones has one good game out of every 10.
Is that like bad?
I feel like that's a pretty good. Somebody said that in the comments, and I was like, you know what? Probably. And the good games come when he's like playing very little minutes and paired with Kane.
So it's quality, not quantity with him. Is that what you're telling me?
Sure. But Erik Gustafsson, I mean, I don't think they're going to move him because nobody's going to want him. Like, I think I would love, go forth and be like that extra body somewhere, but who wants him?
Yeah. I don't think his value is certainly not anywhere near as high as it was when he was a 60-point defenseman. Although the thing, if Kyle Davidson's a really good salesman, it's like, hey, this guy had 60 points one season. Maybe someone needs a power play quarterback, because he can still run a point, but I don't know.
But then you have to have him on the ice at 5-on-5 still.
Do you? if you have five other really good defensemen, I mean, the Hawks won the Stanley Cup with like 4.25 defensemen one year. So
yeah, but those were.
Yeah, those are four really good defensemen. Mill, any other Erik Gustafsson thoughts other than the heavy sigh you had in the background when I first said his name?
Yeah, so their last road game before the deadline's in Minnesota. So I'm thinking they could probably say, hey, we're going to leave him here after the game, and you guys can just give us like a bucket of snow. or Kirk Cousins. I don't even care at this point.
Kirk, Jesus.
Or like whatever remaining roof there is from the old Vikings. I don't care at this point. That guy sucks. They traded him a year too late the first time when they could have got something. They still got lucky and got him out of there for something. And then they brought him back. So the Hawks have to eat that one because they're idiots.
The biggest concern I have is that if they don't move Gustafsson at the deadline, he's going to play over the last month or two and take up ice time from guys like Kalinuk or Mitchell or Galvis or whoever should be up at the NHL level playing.
Kalinuk should have been playing all year.
Yeah, exactly. Although I think it does seem like with Rockford Rockford in the middle of a playoff chase, it does seem like there's some belief indicated by the Hawks' actions that they think it's more beneficial for those guys to be playing 18 to 20 minutes in the AHL in a playoff chase than getting their asses kicked in Chicago every night, which I can't entirely argue with it. It's a fair point, but we'll see what happens the rest of the season, I guess.
Touche.
The other players that are in, excuse me, easy for me to talk. Hashtag English again, as we were saying earlier, Mill. The players, there's players on restricted free agents or expiring contracts that will be restricted free agents, like Kirby Dach not going anywhere. Phil Kuryshev not going anywhere. Caleb Jones is on an expiring contract and will be a restricted free agent. I feel like
please go somewhere.
I'm with you, Shay. I'm with you 100%. But I also, I think the reality of that is he's not going anywhere. And I feel like
there's a chance Kyle Davidson isn't as into brotherly love as Stan Bowman was.
That's a fair point. If Kyle Davidson has his own thoughts about that, like, you know, that would certainly be one way to show that he is not the same person that Stan Bowman is if he decides to trade Seth's little brother out of town.
Well, it's not like Seth can go anywhere, so
yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah. Seth's not going anywhere. So that brings us to the last name on the list. And I should take it back. There are two players on this list. One of them is Kevin Lankinen. He's a backup goalie on an expiring contract. I don't think anyone wants him right now. I imagine he will probably be back in Chicago next season on a cheap deal. If someone like, I'm not even going to entertain the thought like Kevin Lankinen is not going anywhere, right? No one's calling for him.
There's teams that will need a young goaltender, and the people who are invested in Jonas Korpisalo should probably really go for Kevin Lankinen. But
I guess that's one potential destination. But like I wouldn't think like a playoff level team is certainly not going to come calling for Kevin Lankinen because he hasn't proven to be like good enough in the regular season, let alone postseason. Still young, still time to prove. All of those caveats still apply, but I don't think he's a trade piece. The other name, though, that is just above him on the cap-friendly page, and it's Marc-Andre Fleury. And I think the obvious statement when Fleury comes up is he controls the situation entirely with his no-movement clause. If he doesn't want to leave town, the Blackhawks are probably not going to – are almost certainly not going to trade him because doing anything that would anger Marc-Andre Fleury is a way to get a really bad reputation across the entire league because of how beloved Fleury is. My question is more about next season for the three of you. And we'll start with Mill on this one. I'm not totally unconvinced that he wouldn't come back to Chicago next season on a, you know, $3-4 million. Well, maybe five. I don't know. I guess the cap hits sort of irrelevant as long as he's not asking for 10. But if Marc-Andre Fleury is on the Blackhawks next season, like, is that such a bad thing?
Any team that has him, it's a good thing for them. He's an outstanding goaltender. Even at this part of his career, this age, he's kept the Hawks in games consistently. I mean, he's had a couple off nights here or there, but who wouldn't with this team? And I like you said, it just depends on what he wants. Like if it was what I thought should happen, I'd be like, country roads, take me home to Pennsylvania and let's have a last dance and get Phil Kessel back. And, you know, because that's kind of where they're all at in their careers. And Pittsburgh's just good enough to maybe win a couple of rounds. We'll see what they end up doing. However, I just think it depends on how much fun he's going to have playing on a team that's not surely a playoff team. And if he just wants to play hockey and they're treating him well, and maybe his kids are happy here and his wife and all that. So it's really whatever he wants.
Yeah. There's certainly a lot more. There's a lot of exterior circumstances with him that don't apply to a lot of other players. You mentioned the family situation, his reputation in the league, because he's been around for so long. There's a lot more going on with Fleury's situation than others.
And this isn't a joke, not to make the baseball comparison, but it's a lot of times like veteran pitchers when they don't want to get moved. Yeah. You know, they have a family life and they have a home and all that. And they're like, I don't want to get traded halfway across the country. I'm just happy pitching. It's like, maybe that's where he's at. He has 3 Stanley Cup rings and played in 5 finals. Like, damn.
Yeah. He's in his upper 30s. Like I think most people are in a much different place in their late 30s than they were in their earlier mid 20s, or at least hopefully you are. Cause I think that's how life's supposed to work. At least that's what they tell me. Betsy, what about you? I got the question is like, if Marc-Andre Fleury were if he doesn't move at the deadline and is back with the Hawks next season, what does that thought do to your thoughts? I guess that's a great question.
I would love Marc-Andre Fleury to come back. Not only because I think he's good for the locker room, but he could help. I'm hoping the team next year is younger, that they have more of their own prospects up, even if they're not, you know, the Blackhawks don't have a very deep prospect pool, but I'd still like to see more of them in the NHL setting just to see what they've got. Fleury can help them win a little bit because you don't want to bring them up into a completely loser mentality, set culture, whatever catchphrases you want to use about it. And on top of that, I think he's good for Lankinen. I don't think Soderblom is going to be ready. Soderblom, how do you say his name? Is not going to be ready next year. He's doing very well in the AHL, and I think they should let him stay there for a little bit longer because they haven't had a goalie prospect as good as him. And Lankinen showed flashes too, but I think Soderblom is a little bit better. So let him marinate more. They haven't had a goalie do that since Corey Crawford. So, you know, let that happen. Lankinen can be tested and stay the backup, maybe make the splits a little bit more even. So Lankinen isn't riding the pine so much, but I think he's a great mentor. It's what I wanted for Corey Crawford. I really wanted them to sign him as their vet backup for like 2 years on the cheap, just to be a mentor and keep the room, you know, good. But Fleury's awesome. I love him. Totally would like him back. He's just a good guy and a good player.
And to your Corey Crawford comparison, with a related to Arvid Soderblom, like keep in mind that Corey Crawford's first two NHL games were in the 05-06 season, and then his first three starts came during the 07-08 season. He did not become the full-time goalie until the 2010-2011 season. So that's like he made his debut in 05-06, and then it was six seasons later when he became the full-time guy. So if you apply, you know, for Soderblom, like you're looking at like 2025 before you would give him the starting role. Not saying they're going to follow the same trajectory, but yeah, that's an idea of how long those paths.
There's a lot of young goalies out there right now, but most of them were like top round picks, you know, like
yeah, so Vasilevsky being one of them.
Yeah.
Shesterkin, Sorokin, Samsonov.
First two names I cannot say without.
Yeah, the young goalies that are breaking in, because a lot of people are thinking, hey, they should break, you know, oh, he's 22. That's about the age. No, he's not that pedigree. He could be as good if they develop him properly. I don't know about as good, but a good goalie if they could develop him properly. And that's at least more in the line of a Corey Crawford type than. So just be patient. And then Kmesso's coming up too. So, but he's going to be in college for probably at least another season anyway. So just chill.
Shay, what are your thoughts about Marc-Andre Fleury potentially not going anywhere?
You know who doesn't want Marc-Andre Fleury back? The person who wants to tear it all down. Because if Kyle Davidson is serious and I actually understand that this team needs to rebuild, you can't let a goalie play you out of a really good lottery position. I'd rather have Connor Bedard going forward than Marc-Andre Fleury. And it is possible for a goaltender to screw you out of a good lottery pick. Look at, again, the New Jersey Devils and Corey Schneider a few years ago. Like, it is possible for a goaltender to stand on their head for a season. And that's something Marc-Andre Fleury would do. Having full understanding of who Marc-Andre Fleury is, even at this advanced point in his career, I am a Vegas Golden Knights fan. I love Marc-Andre Fleury. I would love Marc-Andre Fleury to return to the Golden Knights on a cheap deal. We need him.
Hey, you're not allowed to advocate for Vegas on this podcast. That's not allowed.
But like Chicago needs to actually rebuild and be bad for a little while. And one of the very few things that could stop them from being bad is Marc-Andre Fleury, especially in combination with Patrick Kane.
And this is where I get this, like, gets into the whole philosophy behind rebuilds and all this. Why do they have to be bad?
Because you need to give yourself as sure a fire a shot at a top three pick as you possibly can.
I see that. That's the part that I struggled to get my mind around, because
about how bad the Chicago White Sox were for so many years, and think about what that did and how, like, we actually have a chance now if baseball it happens again.
But my counter to that is you have. Like, a lot of the players who are going to be here at the end of whatever this rebuild is are already here. And like next season, there could be even more of them here. So if you're going to be bad with all of these players who are going to be around here, that seems bad to me.
Well, that you're all the problem is you're already bad with those players. This you're just not purposefully being bad. Did Buffalo screw themselves a little bit? Yeah, and so did Edmonton. But like you need to actually give yourself as many like picks as possible. And like, again, as Betsy has said in the past, picks fall off dramatically as the draft goes on. You want those top picks.
Yeah, I was literally about to make that point. The probability, the drop off. I totally understand Shay's point. They're right that trying to get that probability chance is like great. There's always the option that they are going to find people. Like if the Blackhawks had picked in the same, like the spot they were supposed to in 2019, instead of jumping top three, they would have Boldy, who looks really solid too, you know? Yeah. So it's like, it's just, you go back and forth. You really want the top picks, but you also do not want the kids, the players that are here to be like in a completely down spiral losing kind of situation either. So they've got to balance that. I personally don't think Fleury is going to get them outside the bottom 10 next year if the only veterans that stick around are the ones that have to, you know, the Kane, Taves, McCabe, Murphy, and Jones. Seth Jones. If those five guys stick around plus Fleury, I don't think even those guys can overcompensate. And then throw in DeBrincat. I don't think it's going to happen. They're in the lower what are they in now? Like even if they were a 500 club, which they've been less than under
King.
Under King, they would still be
2020 and 600 King, which is exactly 500.
Well, that depends on how you look at it. Like, because I think like the way I've always looked at it is you add the last two numbers because those are both losses. So they're 20 and 26, not 20 and 20 and 6.
Shay's right. Based on point percentage, based on if you're looking at where standings are, this season that would still put them at like 23rd, which is exactly in line where JC had them the last bazillion seasons that he shouldn't have been coach. So, I mean, it's just a balancing act. I would rather have the mentorship of it than necessarily getting a top. Who even are the top in 20? I haven't looked that far ahead.
Better.
Connor
Bedard.
I do not think they were going to get first. I don't think they have.
The Russian, Mikhail? No.
I'm not going to lie. I don't think there's anything that they can do if Kane is still on the team for them to be. If Kane and DeBrincat are on the team, I don't think that they're.
Well, yeah. Here's
there's a chance. There's a chance after the draft. There's only one of those two on the team, though.
Here's how I would. Well, I think the word rebuild. I'm starting to really hate that word because it covers a lot of ground and it doesn't really. Like for me, a rebuild is what the White Sox did. Everything must go, you know, which means if the Blackhawks are going to do like the true full on rebuild, as I view the word rebuild, you're trading Taves, you're trading Kane, you're trying to trade Seth Jones. If you can, you're trading DeBrincat, you probably trade Eagle, blow up everything. And if the Blackhawks are going to do that, then yeah, be bad next year. Don't bring Marc-Andre Fleury back. But I don't think that's realistic. I don't think that's going to happen because I don't think you're going to find a buyer for Seth Jones or you're not going to find anyone to take on the term of Seth Jones. You're not going to find anyone that's going to take on 10.5 million a Taze right now. I don't think the Hawks want to trade DeBrincat because I think they view him as still a long-term viable option. So that's where the compromise I would offer you, Shay, is that I don't think the Hawks are going the full rebuild route, which is why I don't want them to be bad next year because the players who are going to be here need to learn how to be good instead of being bad for the sake of draft picks.
I have a question because
go ahead.
Anaheim, they're in a rebuild, but they only got rid of one of their two big stars, for example.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because I was looking at Anaheim kind of thinking like that's kind of the path I could see the Hawks on is like you bring up some of the young guys. You hope maybe Lucas Reichel does Trevor Zegers things. That'd be really cool. I don't think they're the same type of player, so I wouldn't go that far, but it would be cool if that happened. But either way, like start getting your younger players up and, you know, Ryan Getzlaf still on the team and you know,
play. Patrick Kane is way better than Getzlaf.
Yes, but they
still pet Getzlaf because he's essentially mentoring all the guys. Trevor Zegras has talked about how great it is to have someone like Getzlaf on the team, and I mean, I don't always agree with Lazarus and stuff, but he had a good point in one of his articles about how when Taves and Kane came up, they had the right players to mentor them into who they are.
Yeah, I think
Marty
Lapointe, I think, was the big one for Taves, if I remember correctly. But
yeah, and he got to play with Hossa a lot, you know, like at a certain point. And,
I was thinking like back in 07 when they first came up. Marty Lapointe might be off the mark. He might have been gone by then.
He was there in 07, 08.
Okay, thank you, Mel.
That's when they alternated A's, remember?
Yes. I'm glad I think you would know of all people.
Because I have a Taves jersey with an A in the words patch. Year we were all like, yeah. Another guy for Taves, just to throw it out there, was Rob Lang was on that team, remember?
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Betsy. I was just going to say, I don't think Eichel, like you would not bring up Eichel. Not Eichel. Why am I saying that? Reichel.
The Blackhawks got Jack Eichel?
I wish. Like, he wouldn't bring him up if Kane was gone. Like, who's he learning from? He would be surrounded by nothing. And he's too good for the AHL at this point. Like, that's just – I think he's pretty much done. Like, this will be his one AHL season.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting to watch. I think with the trade deadline, we'll start getting a feel for where this team is heading with Kyle Davidson now in charge, whether it is the full-on rebuild that has been potentially floated for a while, or it's more of a try and piece something together out of what you got, what they have right now, and go forward and see if something cool happens. I don't know. Maybe hire a good head. Like I know I've talked about this before on this podcast, but like I just would like to see some of these guys on the Blackhawks of the present in the last few seasons with a at least replacement level NHL coach, because I don't think they've had that yet in their careers. And I just would like to see that and see what happens with that team. And maybe Marc-Andre Fleury is that goalie. And then if that doesn't work in next season, burn the house down. And thank you for coming to my TED Talk. All right. Well, any other thoughts before we turn to some food things, as the best hockey theme or food themed hockey podcast on the internet?
I was just going to say, warning people, Kane's name is going to come up. Like,
That the Colorado Avalanche thing that came up of like the Colorado checked in on Patrick Kane. Well, of course they fucking did. Wouldn't you?
Yeah. And then every rumor site ran with it, which made it seem like it was a bigger deal, but it was literally, so a bunch of teams have reached out to the Blackhawks to say, if he's available, you know, reach it back out to us. And the Avs happened to be one of them. And people freaked out a little bit, both on the internet and even on Second City. And it was like, don't take it to be more than it was.
Folks, like this is that time of year. Check if you're on Twitter, check, you know, you probably should look for the blue check mark. Make sure names aren't just spelled wrong because you're getting a goofy spelling for a parody account. Make sure that Elliot Friedman's name is spelled right on the Twitter name of the person you're retweeting, because it's an easy name to misspell as a parody account. So just stay on top of your game, folks. Like, this is going to be, you know, next week and a half, this is when things get weird in the hockey world and people try to be jackasses and spread and make fake trades up. And don't be that guy. That's my request for everyone listening to this, or girl or person, whatever. Don't be that person. There you go.
And Patrick Kane is not going anywhere unless Patrick Kane wants to go somewhere. And Patrick Kane currently doesn't want to go anywhere, apparently.
And he sounds like he doesn't want to go anywhere, period. Like, not just this trade deadline, but the next trade deadline and next summer. He seems pretty content in Chicago. We'll see if that changes. But
he made that comment about, oh, it could be a business. So I guess if like the Blackhawks came and were like sold it as this is going to be better for the team, he might do it. But he seems to want to be a Blackhawk for life.
Yeah. So we'll have plenty of time. I mean, as soon as this season ends, once the Stanley Cup ends, as soon as Taves and Kane are eligible for the contract extension, whenever that it's sometime over the summer, I forget exactly when that is, but starting on that day, we can start having the were Kane and Taves going at the trade deadline conversation, but we'll do that then, because we'll have plenty of time to talk about it. But right now, let's change courses a little bit, because I understand Shay has a food take for us to argue about. So Shay, the floor is yours.
The best fast food burger is at Wendy's, and the best fast food burger is at Five Guys.
What did you call Five Guys?
Fast with one word, and then fast.
So fast casual. The best fast casual is Five Guys. The best fast food.
I agree that Five Guys is.
I'm not sure I agree with you on Five Guys. I don't think Five Guys is that good. I think Five Guys is wildly overrated, and it's only because of the amount of fries that they throw at you.
Mm. Which the customization ability, the widespread, like the best ability is availability, and Five Guys is very available. Shake Shack is not, and Shake Shack is much more expensive.
Shake Shack isn't available in as many places, so I don't have a good read on that. Yeah. But go on, sorry.
In-N-Out. I've lived in California. Straight trash. In-N-Out is trash. You know,
I had In-N-Out in Arizona. I'm like, oh, this is what people make a big deal about? It's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not going back out to
California. And it's also the Chick-fil-A of burgers.
Okay.
It is not good. And then Whataburger. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Whataburger is good.
Whataburger is another one that's like, I didn't think it was anything extravagant. It got the job done, but you know, I'll put it on my third line. It's not going in my top six.
Right. Its best sandwich is also a breakfast sandwich. It's the chicken butter honey. It's the butter. Yeah, it's the chicken butter honey.
There are no bad words there. Whew.
No, but it's not their burger.
I don't like Wendy's burgers that much.
It's
fine. They have the bacon one, right? Like the
Baconator, yes.
Which I made a very poor decision of having that at a airport once. Not tummy friendly. when
you're oh no, absolutely not. That's a real bad idea.
It was the shortest line.
I just want to tell you, I think Burger King makes the best burgers.
I was going to say
fast food.
They have a good grill taste to them.
Yeah, I really think they are criminally underrated in the fast food game.
Okay,
I think they're way better than McDonald's.
Yes. The problem with Burger King is also their fries.
The fries aren't great, but like if we're just talking burgers, I'm taking Burger King. That's my number one center on the fast food area.
Steak and Shake's fast food, because I like their burgers.
No, I think Steak and Shake is closer to the
fast. I think Steak and Shake might be fast casual. Yeah,
they're in the Five Guys tier, and I would
all Five Guys here. You have to get out to get. There's no drive through for them, and all Steak and Shakes have drive throughs. So.
Yeah, but they also take as long as to go in to sit down once. Sometimes, at least the ones I've been to. I'm trying to think of other like the fast casual like. It's a very local thing. It's up in the Rockford area, but there's Beefaroo, which is fantastic. I feel like they're a local Culver's basically. Like I got a very strong Culver's vibe out of there. Culver's is another place that I think I would put over Five Guys for burgers.
Do you guys have Fuddruckers?
Not anymore.
Not really. No.
Yeah, they used to be around here, but they're gone.
Portillo's is good, but they like to burn their burgers.
I've never had a Portillo's burger. If I go there, it's hot dogs or Italian beef.
Yeah, there's like eight things on the menu that you should get before a Portillo's burger.
Yeah.
Are there any veggie options? So milk and
yeah, Mel, what's your power rating for veggie burgers?
Yeah, give me your veggie burger go-tos.
Me cooking at home is number one.
How fast is that? Is that fast or just fast?
I mean, for me, fast is like not seasoning it and marinating it all day.
All right. That sounds
good. Burger King's Whopper, they're like an impossible one. It tastes pretty damn close to a real Whopper. And I like to have that occasionally. But we're in Crown Point where I live, the Burger King burned down like last summer. So I could go out to Valpo, but I sometimes have Burger King on the road, like an Impossible Whopper, because they have them at all like the rest stops and stuff going to Pittsburgh and like out east. But more places need to get them, I think.
Yeah,
so I can talk about it.
I think the main thing we've the main thing I'm taking away from this is that Burger King is the burger goat. So
I've had all the ones you guys have talked about, and I would probably say, like, if this probably doesn't count because it's not like national, but Shoop's was like my favorite casual fast food burger.
That's a very home baseball type of thing, because that's strictly Northwest Indiana thing.
Well, it's like a smash and it's crispy.
It's there's a place, I forget what neighborhood in Chicago it's in. It's far, it might be Lincoln Park, it may be Logan Square. It's one of the places somewhere like that. Like it's north of the Loop is all I can, and that's a lot of neighborhoods, but they called it Region, and they just basically took the idea of Shoop's Burgers and took it to Chicago because
I respect the name.
Northwest Indiana. So it's very similar to Steak and Shake style of burgers, with just a very flat patty. That's a very large patty that's very thin.
To me, I think I never like argued though. Like when I was eating, I'm like, Five Guys is fine. It's good. You know, In-N-Out's fine. Like sometimes it's going to be better than others depending on who makes it and if they give a shit or not. But like, I think like fast food is fast food. And, I don't know. I used to like the Wendy's one.
Yeah. I don't think Wendy's is bad. I just don't think their burgers are as good as Burger King.
If I was ranking fast, because do you think Checkers is fast?
Oh yeah. Oh,
I fucking love Checkers. Burger King and
Rallies I forgot about like Checkers and Rallies. I feel like they're interchangeable. They might be the same people.
And then if you're basing it more on like the whole experience, Checkers fries are far superior to Burger King. So that gives it.
Well, I think the original take was strictly burger related.
Okay, then burger, then like Burger King, then Checkers. Yeah,
that's a whew.
But I still don't like the Wendy's that much.
I'll be honest with you guys. I've never had a fast food burger where I was like, sometimes you're disappointed, but I was like, oh, I don't want to eat this. Like they're usually like, okay, at least. The only time I've ever remember being grossed out by hamburgers is like in school when they give you school lunch and it's like terrible. It's like not real beef, but it's not a veggie burger. It's like some kind of other meat.
I once got a cheeseburger from McDonald's that didn't have the burger part in it. It was just bread and cheese.
Oh, but that's a grilled cheese.
It was definitely not grilled. So
oh man,
I wish. Oh, it did. It had onions too, which I thought was weird.
Oh,
if this was around the horn, we'd have to award Shea points for that one. That was funny and true.
I wish it had been
grilled cheese. It's supposed to have onions though, so that's a problem.
Yeah, there's little gross ones that take forever to. Not only did I order, obviously, a burger, but I ordered it without onions. So that's the reason I remember it. It didn't have pickles, though. I had to loop back around and be like, I'm not having this.
I feel like that was a former Popeyes employee that did that to you, where they just can't ever get your order right.
Hey, don't disrespect the best chicken in the game.
I'm not disrespecting their product. I'm disrespecting the fact, or I'm just stating the fact that every time I used to go there, they would give me the wrong order.
That's true, I think, of every Popeyes. That happens every single time. It's always my mom's order, too. So I'm like, you just have bad luck.
All right, well, I want to leave it at the grilled cheese, though, because that's one of my favorite things that's ever happened on this podcast. So I think we're going to wrap it up right here for this episode of Musings on Madison. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out and listening. Shay is on Twitter at Shepherd Price. Mill is at Mill182. Betsy's not on Twitter, but you can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. I'm at TML57. We're not going to have a show next week because I think I've told you guys I'm going out of town. I haven't told you where. I'm going to go be a soccer hooligan in England for a week. So I'm more excited than I've been for a vacation in a very long time. So I don't want to go into it here because I could talk for the next hour about it. But that's why we're not going to have a show next week. I'll come back on trade deadline day fighting jet lag. Easy for me to say. So I guess the best thing I could tell you is come back next week and find out if I'm talking with a British accent or not. So that's going to do it for this episode of Musings on Madison. Thanks again for listening. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out tonight. And we will talk to you in 2 weeks.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.